I'm going to buzz you in.
I've come to a two-story building in Oakland's Temescal District to see how restorative justice works firsthand. I'm here to meet a teenager arrested for burglary and conspiracy.
And I know we're just kind of waiting on law enforcement. Again, they were contacting, and I do hope they come. If they don't, what I'll do is I'll see if one of my coworkers will come in, and they'll play the role of law enforcement.
That's Jonathan Bradley, a restorative community conferencing coordinator. He's arranged this meeting, but he's a little nervous. He's not sure if everyone will show up. Okay. Already, the victim has refused, so Bradley asked me to sit in as a surrogate. We walk into a room where several chairs are arranged in a circle. Soon after, the tall teen walks in, head down, with his grandmother.
Okay.
They don't want to be recorded. Both the teen and his grandmother sit across from me. And right away, she asks how long the meeting will take. She's got to get back to work. A conference coordinator with Community Works comes in to play the part of a police officer, who also didn't show up. She reads a police report with a firm voice. The teen looks down at the ground. Then Bradley asks me to tell a story about when my purse was stolen. Not the same crime this teen committed, but a time that I was victimized. For the first time, the teen looks up at me. He stares straight into my eyes. I tell him I felt paranoid, angry, violated. It happened over a year ago, but I try to be present. He's listening. His grandmother says she'd be so angry if that happened to her. Her arms are folded, just like her grandson's. Bradley asks him to stand up, to write on a big presentation paper everything that he needs to work on. The teen's demeanor changes. He's happy to be writing all of this out, applying for jobs, volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club, talking to kids at a middle school about crime.
What our program requires is that they fix the harm in four areas. They fix the harm to themselves, they fix the harm to their families, they fix the harm to the victim, of course, and they fix the harm to the community.
Bradley has more than 100 cases like this one. He's completed 40 so far. Some of them are serious assaults, burglaries, and robberies, all scheduled to meet their victims face to face.
Ooh, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to have to apologize.
That's Sujatha Baliga. She's a former defense attorney who was frustrated with seeing so many young people get caught up in what she thought was a broken criminal justice system. Now she works at the National Council on Crime and Delinquency.
I worked with the district attorney to develop what we call the reverse Miranda rule, which means basically the Miranda rule is that anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. Reverse Miranda is that nothing you say can be used against you in a court of law.
Baliga has been training facilitators at Community Works and other sites around the Bay. She's hoping that eventually restorative justice will catch on nationwide.
Hello, it's so much cheaper than adjudicating a youth delinquent. Like when we think about all the court costs of assigning a public defender and this hearing and that hearing. And, you know, I've heard estimates $45,000, $55,000 just to run a kid through the system. You know, we can do this for about $4,000 per kid.
And it's not just keeping kids out of detention centers. It's being incorporated in schools as well. The San Francisco and Oakland Unified School Districts use restorative justice methods to confront conflicts before they spin out of control and lead to suspensions, or worse.
And actually, he was at the police station because he and the other four boys had been apprehended by the police.
I join a mother and her 16-year-old son at their kitchen table in the city of Albany.
This is, of course, very scary to hear that your son has stolen a car, essentially.
I was in the restorative justice program because during the summer when I was with a bunch of my friends and we were out very late, I had snuck out of my house.
The teen's mom still seems visibly bothered while her son tells the story.
He felt terrible. He initially first felt terrible about having upset his parents and having brought this shame. It was very, very shameful. I mean, to have handcuffs put on you, to be taken to the station.
The family waited for a court summons. they were expecting some sort of punishment to be handed down. After waiting several weeks, they were notified that the case would be handled by Community Works. The teen remembers his friends and their parents being called into a room. At the victim's request, the policemen who arrested them were there as well. They talked in detail for hours in more than one meeting.
And then we reached this peak where we know we're not going to do this again. We were calling ourselves stupid for what we did. But it kept going. Do you realize what you've done? Do you realize how you've affected this community? And that started to make us feel kind of like, you know, bad, very bad people.
At that session, the teens did not have to confront the owner of the car they were joyriding in the Berkeley Hills. She'd moved. Instead, the victim wrote a letter that was read out loud by the surrogate.
The victim expressed fear, a feeling that anybody around there, because she lived near the school, that any of these kids could have been involved, you know, this sort of basic sense of violation got expressed.
What was your son's reaction to hearing that letter?
I think that he was profoundly sort of shaken by it, in the sense that when he heard that the victim had moved away, he thought, well, maybe she moved because of this. She mentioned that she had a small child and that the small child was affected by what had happened, and he then realized that there was a kid involved here. And I do think that he felt very badly about how the victim had felt.
But the teen tells me he's not so sure if the session really had an impact on him. He thought that the victim not being there herself made it not seem as real. And they often don't show up. Many victims don't want anything to do with confronting the perpetrator. Police often don't show up either. And these are some of several criticisms about restorative justice. Not enough buy-in. Not enough consequence. Nonetheless, Congress has been increasing the amount of federal money for restorative justice programs. Although it's cheaper than sending a child to a detention center, it's still very labor-intensive. Counselors have to check in to make sure promises are kept, rooms cleaned, community service completed, jobs applied for. And on the front end, if the parents, police, or victims don't show up to the conferencing, it can send a message to the kids that it's not important. It's the fundamental strength and weakness of restorative justice, that it only works when everyone is convinced to care. For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.